喂呀哟，喂呀呀哟，喂呀哟，嘿哟。
Meriwether Lewis, July 26, 1806. I had scarcely ascended the hills before I discovered to my left, at a distance of a mile, an assemblage of about 30 horses. I halted and used my spyglass, by the help of which I discovered several Indians on the top of an eminence just above them. This was a very unpleasant sight. However, I resolved to make the best of our situation and to approach them in a friendly manner.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. It was midsummer. Rain fell, obscuring the mountains. The young Piegan warriors, returning from a successful horse raid against the Crow, had stopped at the Two Medicine River to water their stock. They were a half-day ride from their home camp. One of them may have made a vow to the keeper of one of the sacred bundles of the Blackfeet that, upon his return, the keeper would hold a ceremony to give thanks for his victory. A sentry noticed a tall white man with a rifle walking in the brush along the river. He was dressed like one of the French traders from the north who sold him guns. He seemed to be tracking an animal, as every now and again he stooped and looked at the ground. Then they caught sight of three more men advancing across the bottom. One of the men held a flag of red stripes in a blue field of stars. Some of the warriors were sent to gather their captured horses and return to the hill to defend their position. Another rider mounted his horse and galloped at full speed to within 100 paces of the advancing men, where he stopped and studied them. One of the white men got off his horse and beckoned, but the young warrior spun around and raced back to report. It was July 1806, the return journey of the Corps of Discovery. While Clark had taken the main body of the Corps on a southern route through Crow Country, Lewis took a small group of men to seek the headwaters of the Mrise River in order to determine the northernmost reach of the Missouri watershed. Reaching the Two Medicine River, at a point just 12 miles south of present-day Browning, Montana, Lewis came upon the small party of Piegan Blackfeet. It was an encounter that would result in the only native fatalities during the entire expedition, but those deaths would mar Blackfeet-American relations for decades to come. Some say the 8 Piegan warriors who watched Lewis and his men were no older than 13 to 19 years of age. They rode toward Lewis, got off their horses, and shook hands with the corps men in a friendly manner. That evening, they sat in a shelter with the captain, smoked, and through Druyard's sign language, shared some misinformation. While Lewis told a Piegan he had come to their country to ask the Blackfeet to make peace with their enemies, the Piegan claimed they were Gros Ventre hunters and had 3 chiefs among them. Lewis gave them some trinkets, and to the one named Sidehill Calf, he gave a peace medal. The next morning, as the corps men slept, the Piegan warriors attempted to capture their guns. In the confusion that followed, Reuben Fields wrestled his brother's gun from the hands of Sidehill Calf and stabbed him in the heart with his hunting knife. The boy ran 15 paces and fell dead. Lewis shot another boy in the belly, a wound that was probably fatal. Later, when Lewis examined the body of Sidehill Calf, he found the peace medal he had given him still around his neck. He left the medal on his body, quote, so that they might be informed who we were. The Blackfeet are made up of 3 politically independent tribes, the Piikani or Piegan, the Kainai or Blood, and the Siksika or Northern Blackfoot. The 3 tribes speak the same Algonquin dialect and share the same customs. Long ago, they moved from the Great Lakes region onto the Northern Plains. Their oral history is filled with stories of the dog days, before the horse, when dogs were the principal beast of burden, and the buffalo were hunted by driving them off cliffs. Today they live east of the Glacier Mountain Range in northern Montana and Alberta. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. What happens when religions collide? Often, as we hear in the news, the spiritual fabric that is created to unite people can lead to divisions and intolerance. But, as Brian Bull shows in today's Elder Wisdom, the survival of a tribal religion hinges on the enduring beliefs of its followers.
69-year-old Cynthia Kipp is a Blackfeet elder who claims 43 grandchildren and 26 great-grandchildren. Her Browning, Montana home is nestled away among some cottonwoods by the Two Medicine River. As she holds a granddaughter in her arms, she reminisces about her own childhood and her reverence for Blackfeet spirituality.
The earliest time that I was able to see the Thunder Pipe was in the early 40s when my grandmother, John and Mary Ground, acquired the pipe. It left a profound impact on me as a small child. I saw the religious ceremony, the sacred doings that went on there. I remember all the elderly people in the 40s at that time who were all there. I was very, very impressed, and it stayed with me all my life. I saw how devout my mother and her brothers and sisters were when my grandmother and grandfather were transferred that pipe. When I saw the happening there with my grandmother, she looked so serene, and I thought that she was so holy. When we are small, we were shown that we must have a lot of respect for a sacred ceremony. There's no running around of small children. It leaves a great impression on a small child that you know what's happening is very, very religious, and you must have real good manners in which to be in there, to hear all the holy sacred songs, to remember how the elderly people were dressed and exactly what they went through.
Kip still recalls her grandparents' thunder bundle, considered to be an important source of spiritual power or medicine among the Blackfeet. Kip says there were many medicine bundles kept on the reservation during her childhood.
Years later, I looked back on it and thought, why, you know, this was our life. I mean, this was our life's blood. Everything that we did pertained to the bundle.
Kip says the thunder bundle is unwrapped when the spring's first thunder is heard, revealing a sacred pipe. Then, all during the year, pipes were used for prayer. She remembers how her grandfather hosted gatherings at their home with elders to pray, consult, and share food together.
The first thing they do is light a smudge and pray and sing and smoke their pipe and visit. And they were really very, very polite to each other. When they came in and they would be fed, they'd sit around and smoke their pipe. And then the host or the owner of the lodge, if it was in a lodge, instead of him saying, well, you know, it's really late, I have to go to work in the morning, I've got a lot to do, I want you all to leave. He didn't do that. Like I'm telling you, they were very polite. He would take the pipe, he'd take the bowl out, and he'd put it in his smudge box. He'd empty the tobacco out, and all he said was, the pipe is out. And that was an indication for everyone to get up and leave, and they did. They really practiced do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Kip says many relatives uphold the Blackfeet religion, which is openly practiced today. But she recalls the 1930s and 40s, when Christian churches were trying to erase Blackfeet traditions across Montana, including spiritual ceremonies.
I remember when I was a little girl, the priest came out, and that's exactly what he asked us, if we had gone to a ceremony, and we all said, no, we didn't. So yes, they tried to stop it. In fact, they did when the missionaries first came in the early 1800s. And then when they built a Holy Family Mission over here on Two Medicine in 1882, my grandmother went to the mission, as well as my mother and her older sisters. And they were told not to speak Blackfeet. Their hair was cut. They were told not to believe in their religion, that it was wrong, that they had to believe the Catholic ways or else. If you didn't believe in the Holy Catholic Church, you would certainly go to hell. And when I was small, I was frightened to death because in our religion, we have no hell. We have no devil.
Of all the things her ancestors helped preserve during the missionary movement, Kip is particularly grateful for the traditional stories that form the backbone of Blackfeet spirituality.
Blackfeet mythology is really very, very special to me because the oral tradition of the Blackfeet was certainly something that everyone should know about. our own stories of creation, our own stories of the constellations, of the sky, and usually the stories that they told had a meaning. And the wintertime was usually the time that they told the stories in the lodges. I can imagine it was beautiful.
Kip says many stories told around the fire involved a Blackfeet cultural hero named Napi, or the Old Man.
He's our mythical character who was a prankster, a joker, and he could change things. He talked to the animals. Sometimes he got himself into an awfully lot of trouble, and he did a lot of things that he shouldn't do. Do you see the cottonwood trees out here behind the house? You see that it looks like great big eyes on the tree? One time, Napi came upon these little birds sitting on the limb, and he said, "Oh, my little brothers," he said, "what are you doing?" Well, the little birds would say, "Nipumucket," and their eyes would pop out. And they'd say, "Come suppy, pumucket," and their little eyes would pop back in. And they told Napi, "Brother, you can only do it three times. The fourth time, if you do it four times, your eyes are going to stay on the trees." And so Napi said, "Oh, I don't have to," he said to himself, "I don't have to listen to these little birds, these little nipumuckies. They don't know what they're talking about." So it was his turn, and Napi said, "Nipumucket." His eyes popped out, and he said, "Tumsuppi pumucket," and they come back in. Well, he did it one time too many, and his eyes stayed on the trees. That's why you see those great big eyes on the cottonwood trees right today. The lesson learned from that episode is that you have to pay attention and you have to follow the rules. Listen to what someone is telling you. When they say don't, well, then don't. But other than that, if someone isn't minding, they tell them, "Hey, you're just like old Napi. Now stop." I still tell the stories to my 10 children. They heard all the Napi stories about the fox, about the gophers, about the birch trees. They've heard all the stories. Now their children, I have 9 children. I adopted my sister's daughter who passed away. And I have 43 grandchildren and soon to have 26 great-grandchildren.
Kip says she sees many young people taking up the old ways, including a growing number who participate in traditional sweat lodge ceremonies. She makes sure her grandchildren participate in the Blackfeet tribal language programs. While the days of the missionaries are largely past, the after effects, such as the near extinction of the Blackfeet language, are still felt among the tribe. Kip is determined to reclaim it for the coming generations. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe. He lives with his wife, 2 kids, and 3 cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse Skelton talks about diabetes and diet. And in Tribal Rhythms, Nico Nguyen brings us the music of the hand game among the Blackfeet.
I've sang some of my grandfather's songs. It seems like the old ones are better for, playing because they give you better luck, I would say.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us.
When you talk to me, I